to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Message Broker Version 7, New Features and Troubleshooting Techniques. Today's presenter is Kailash Perry. Kailash works with WebSphere Message Broker Level 2 support team and is involved with WebSphere Message Broker for the past 8 years. He has been working with L2 support of WebSphere Message Broker products since the version 2.1 days. As an L2 support engineer, he works with customers worldwide in troubleshooting and resolving issues related to WebSphere Message Broker. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kailash.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kailash Perry, and I work as a Level 2 support engineer for Message Broker and WSRR products. In today's presentation topic, I will present the new features that are introduced in WebSphere Message Broker version 7, along with some troubleshooting techniques. Let's go to slide number 2 and discuss the agenda. All right, here's the agenda of the session. First, we will discuss the overview of the product, where I will cover the product simplifications and productivity enhancements that have been done in version 7. Then, we will talk about the various nodes that are available and geared towards achieving SOA and universal connectivity. That will be followed by features that are provided to enable dynamic operation management. We will then discuss debugging features that are available in version 7, what are the differences from earlier versions of debugging, and then we will talk about some troubleshooting techniques. We will then open the floor for any questions and answers you might have. Let's go to slide number 3. Here is an overview of Broker version 7 and a list of things that are available in this version. First, simplicity and productivity. That is the main theme of version 7. First is the radical streamlining of the product prerequisites and components in the product itself. And we will talk about Message Broker Explorer, which is totally dedicated to handle administration tasks. The new impact analysis feature, which will let you manage changes to a number of development artifacts. And we'll talk about the development patterns for simplified connectivity solution development. And then we will move on to the new SCA nodes that have been introduced to interact with WebSphere process server. Moving from there, we will talk about the universal connectivity for SOA. There have been many nodes that have been introduced to expand the interaction of Message Broker with the other products. We will also talk about the PHP nodes enhancements have been done for Web 2.0 support. And we will discuss enhanced support for EIS integration and about the new sequence and resequence nodes. In dynamic operation management, there are a number of new features have been added to provide audit and monitoring features. We have enhanced the statistics to provide broker performance details. We will talk about that. And a number of improvements have been done to the user trace so that when you take a user trace, it will give you extra details on your flow processing. And about the improvements of WSRR nodes and Service Federation Management support. Also, we will talk about how brokers take advantage of the multi-instance queue manager functionality to offer highly available multi-instance brokers. We will then move on to platforms, environment, and performance. Just to give you a high level, Broker version 7 is exclusively 64-bit on almost all platforms except a couple of them. And one of the things that we have done in version 7 is to reduce broker's memory footprint. And also, there are a number of performance monitoring tools that are available. We'll talk about them as well. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 4, supported operating environments. As you can see from the list, most of the operating systems and hardware platforms that support version 6 are still supported, with the exception of HPUX PRS platform. And as far as software prerequisites, only WMQ version 7.0.1 or higher is required. Otherwise, there are no dependencies for version 7 broker. As far as the user databases, broker version still supports DB2, Oracle, Sybase, SQL Server, and Informix. Okay? We no longer require a broker database, and the user database support we have not touched. It remains unchanged. All right, coming to 64-bit support, all the commands that are supplied with broker version 7 are 64-bit, and execution groups are 64-bit by default on platforms where 64-bit support is available, and 32-bit execution groups are not available generally. And on ZOS, the address spaces are 64-bit, and on Windows, however, the execution groups still remain 32-bit, though we work on 64-bit Windows platforms. So the supported Windows platforms are your XP, Windows 2003 Release 2, Windows 2008, Vista 32-bit and 64-bit. Okay? And coming to the Java support, we now use Java version 6 and the 64-bit IBM J9 engine, which provides superior performance and reduced memory footprint, which allows faster startup times. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, slide number 5. Let's talk about migration and coexistence briefly before we dive into the details of version 7 features. If you're migrating from version 6 or version 6.1, migration is very simple. The migration now includes migrating all your configuration data. That means including your broker database, queues, and registry, queue managers, so on and so forth. You can migrate, as I mentioned, from version 6 or 6.1 to version 7, or from version 7 to 6 or 6.1. Basically, it's a reverse migration process. And migrating is done just by one command, which is the MQSI migrate component command. It has got several options, and that will take care of your migration. All your version 6 artifacts, like your message flows, message sets, Java code, your ESQL maps, and access any file sheets that you have, will run on version 7 broker without any changes. And execution groups, which are 32-bit on platforms where 64-bit support is available, are converted to 64-bit by default. And in version 7, we no longer support the MQ real-time clients, so they are converted to MQ7 clients, and also the telemetry nodes are not supported as well. Coming to coexistence, version 7 of Message Broker can coexist with version 6 or version 6.1 or earlier versions of brokers if you're still running them. Basically, you can have these both these versions exist on the same system as long as the product is installed in two separate directories and the component names are unique. On slide 6, let us discuss what has been done to simplify the product from its previous versions. First of all, starting with the prerequisites. If you're familiar with earlier versions, you would need WMQ and a supported database for Message Broker to run. Now, with version 7, the only prerequisite is WebSphere MQ 7.0.1 or higher. So we have removed the need for a broker database. And the config manager and username server components are removed. As you know, in the earlier versions, config manager used to be the seat of intelligence in earlier versions, starting with 2.1. For example, when you initiated a deploy from the toolkit, what used to happen was toolkit used to send a message to the config manager, which then sent a message to the broker. And when the broker responded back to the config manager used to update its tables, and then a response was sent to the toolkit. Okay? And if there is some disruption during this flight, what you ended up with was a broker config manager out of sync scenario. Okay? Now that we have removed the config manager, there is one less component in the whole process, so it will be like much more faster and there will be less deploy issues. Also, the config manager was used to have ACLs for security. Since config manager is now removed, that functionality is being handled by MQ. Also, as I mentioned, username server is gone. So if you are using PubSub applications, publish-subscribe applications are now handled by MQ. So basically, you don't need a broker database. And also, like, you know, one of the things that the broker database used to do is it used to have all the flow details that were deployed, and the broker database was accessed at startup time when the execution groups used to start. The broker's configuration data is now held in an internal repository on the file system. So it's all file-based. So what's the net result? Your speed. Speed will increase because you don't need to depend on the database access. So the less database access, so all you're doing is file access, it'll be much faster. Okay? And the other thing, by moving the broker to the file system, the problem determination, things will be much more easier. Suppose, or if you want to move your broker, if you want to move your broker from one system to the other, all you have to do is use the MQSI backup broker command, and it will back up all the configuration data on your file system into a zip file, and you take it to the target system and use the MQSI restore command or MQSI restore broker command, and there you have your broker. And for any reason, if you're having issues with your broker, what you can do is send us a broker backup so that we can, like, restore it on our system and we have your entire setup for us to troubleshoot. Okay? Also, if you had any aggregations or collections in earlier versions, these were handled in the database. Now that the broker database is gone, MQ handles them. Okay? So basically, the broker is now become more lean and mean. All right? Let's move on to slide number 7. And continuing with product simplifications, as I mentioned briefly, deployments are now optimized. All the applications that manage brokers and their resources connect directly to the broker. For example, your toolkit, message broker explorer, and any commands that interact with the broker, like your MQSI deploy, MQSI list, or start message flows, etc. So what used to happen in version 6 or 6.1, if you remember, all these commands had to consult the config manager before, like, you know, you got your results back. Now that the config manager is gone, there is one reduced level of interaction. They all talk to the broker directly. All right? And also, there are no more broker database interactions in this process, which is basically resulting in faster responses. If your flows are accessing a user database, there is no change there. The user database access is still supported, so you will still have your ODBC or JDBC connectivity. Okay? And since the config manager is gone, the broker has assumed all the config manager functionality. Okay? And you have your message broker toolkit and Message Broker Explorer, these two can handle multiple brokers from within them. If you have written any Config Manager Proxy API applications, they still work unchanged, so you don't have to change them. They talk to the broker directly instead of the Config Manager. And the Publish Subscribe functionality is now handled by WMQ. So there are some new system queues that have been introduced for access control because the ACLs are gone from the Config Manager. I think those are pretty much the simplifications we have done. So let's move on to the next slide, slide number 8. Let's see our Message Broker Explorer. This is an administrative interface that is integrated as a plugin into WMQ Explorer. If you're familiar with the ISO 2 support pack, this is the same with extended functionality. Okay, what does this do? It allows local and remote administration of brokers and queue managers. The WMB Explorer provides all the functionality that the broker administration perspective used to provide, and it'll offer more. And the toolkit still provides administration features in the broker's view, but they're kind of limited. Okay? So what else can you do with WebSphere Message Broker Explorer? You can create, delete, start, or stop local brokers without the command line. Okay? You can also deploy bar files to multiple execution groups using drag-and-drop mechanisms. Right? You can view accounting and statistics data and resource statistics data in a graphical format. You can also configure broker properties and create or modify configurable services without having to run MQSI change properties or create configurable service commands from the command line. You can also check your broker queues, and if you want to remove any pending tasks that are submitted to the broker, you can do that. And if you have a data power appliance, there are options to connect to that device and configure settings using Message Broker Explorer. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, slide number 9. Publish subscribe. MQ now handles publish subscribe since the username server component is gone. Alright, all your public subscribe applications now use a single topic space that is managed by MQ. Access control is also handled by MQ because the config manager is gone. And there is no more broker domain concept. The WMQ clusters provide the functionality of broker domains, topologies, and collectives. The publication node uses WMQ PubSub facilities. Okay? There is a new terminal on the publication node which is provided, and that can be used if there are no subscribers found for the registered topics. All right? And the MQ real-time and the MQ telemetry nodes are no longer supported. It's version 7. So the nodes listed here, the real-time input, real-time optimized flow, and the SCADA nodes have been removed. All right, let's move to slide number 10. WMB Toolkit. All right, here are some of the features of version 7 Toolkit. The toolkit is an IDE that supports all application development lifecycle tasks. You can also create local brokers using the toolkit and connect to remote brokers. With earlier versions of the toolkit, the broker, you had to create it from the command line first, and then you used to add it to the toolkit. You can now create a broker from within the toolkit, and you can create execution groups both local and remote from within the toolkit. So you can also stop and start brokers and execution groups from the toolkit itself. And of course, you can also configure debug ports from each execution group, and you can also perform unit testing from within the toolkit. So, just to recap, you can use the toolkit to debug local and remote brokers, drag and drop flows directly onto execution groups, and test flows directly using your .env test files or directly. Okay? And you can select bar files from the file system. If you have any bar files lying on your file system, you can drag and drop them directly onto onto your execution groups for deploys. All right, let's go to slide number 11. In the toolkit now, you have a quick starts view, and I've included a screenshot of that. With the quick starts view, you can either start a flow from scratch or use an existing WSGO or XSV file and continue development from there. Or if you have an existing message set or an adapter connection, or if you have an SCA import or export, you can use them as starting points for development. So if you want to use one of the provided application pattern samples or from the samples gallery, you can invoke them from the quick start view. Let's move on to slide number 12. As I mentioned, in the toolkit, there is a new Patterns Explorer view, which has a set of patterns you can use to create resources to solve a specific business pattern. So the categories that are available in the patterns are your application integration pattern, file processing, service enablement, and message-based integration and service virtualization. So each pattern has got specific scenarios and examples for you to use. So, for example, the application integration category contains a one-way IDOC pattern, basically from SAP to MQ. And similarly, in file processing category, we show a one-way record distribution to WMQ. And message-based integration has some request-response scenarios. And service virtualization, we show how to use static endpoints using WSRR. So basically, all these patterns are going to provide a way for you to have a starting point and modify them to fit your scenario or use them as examples. All right? Let's move to the next slide, slide 13. Talk about more enhancements in the broker toolkit. Okay, asset change management. So if you're developing an application and you want to change the names of some of the artifacts, like your node names, flow names, ESQL modules, message maps, in the previous versions, you would not know unless you deploy, and the deploy fails, giving you an error message. Whereas with version 7, you can use the new impact analysis feature, which will report the artifacts that are likely going to be affected by the change. Right? What impact analysis is going to do, it's going to list two types of impact. Primary impact, which is immediate consequences if a change is performed. Say, for example, you're renaming a file. What are the immediate impacts that's going to cause? Right? And the secondary impact, which is basically an impact that causes a dependent artifact to be impacted. Say, for example, if you have a message set, you change a message or a global element in a message set. What are the impacts? What is the impact that it's going to cause? So secondary impact is going to list all the maps, message flows, or message definitions that are going to be affected by this change. Okay? And if you want impact analysis to work, basically what you have to do is you can set in the toolkit preferences, there is a checkbox which you need to enable indexing. So these flows will be indexed, and it will be the indexes are going to be calculated and say, okay, basically if this name is changed, what is the effect? So once your impact analysis is done and you have figured it out, I suggest you turn the flag off. Otherwise, what's going to happen is every time you make a modification to the flow, the indexes are going to be rebuilt. So basically, it's going to like drag your performance, toolkit performance a little bit. All right? And coming to the mapping node, you can now have DB2 or Oracle stored procedures. You can call them from within a mapping node. Okay? And also the sample gallery in version 7 is got like a tons and tons of examples compared to version 6 or 6.1. Okay? All right, let's move on to the next slide, slide 14. Talk about universal connectivity options. What we have done is to enable broker to interact with other products, we have introduced a number of new nodes and configurable services. First of all, the SCA nodes provide interaction between message broker and WebSphere process server. Process server is an integration server that supports SOA-based solutions. So you can use the SCA input and SCA reply node to construct a flow which implements an SCA. The input node will listen for SCA inbound requests from WPS to broker, and then the reply node will send a response back to the client that originated the request. Right? Same thing with the SCA async request and async response. You can construct a flow to invoke WPS service component asynchronously. Right? And the SCA request node, you can use that to send a request to WPS. This node, you can use it as a synchronous request response, which will work in a blocked mode, or one way, like you fire and forget. All right? And the toolkit, we have done some improvements to facilitate these nodes. You can now import an SCDL file and create a skeleton flow by dragging and dropping. We have also introduced a wizard which will allow you to create an SCDL file from a message flow. Okay? Let's move on to the next slide. Slide 15, and talk about PHP support. PHP is a scripting language, and it is very well suited for message transformation and routing. So what you can do is you can now use PHP along with your ESQL or Java to transform and route messages. Basically, it's one more option that's available for you. Except on Solaris x86-64-bit, all platforms PHP is supporting. Right? I'm not very sure of what the nuances behind PHP not supported on Solaris x86. I can find that out, but I did not have So far, I have not found what the reasons are. But continuing, like a compute node or a Java compute node, PHP compute node is a programmable node that you can use to manipulate messages. I have kind of shown a couple of examples which are not very clear, but I will tell what those are here. You basically can copy an incoming message two ways. One, by using the annotation method, or using without annotation. So if you use the at message broker copy transform annotation, what it's going to do is it is going to create the new output message and message assembly objects. They are created automatically for you. Whereas if you don't use the annotation, you have to create them yourself by calling the new MB message and new MB message assembly methods. Also, one note of caution here, just like using a Java compute node, when you do a new MB message object, at the end of your node, before you propagate your message, you have to call the clear message method so that the memory allocated for the MB message object is cleared. Okay? Let's move on to slide number 16. And using this PHP node, if you want to traverse message trees, you can use the get methods that are listed here. If you want to get the parent element, you'll use the get parent, or if you want to get the children of the current element, use the get children method. So these methods basically are the same like in ESQL or your Java API. So here I've shown a small example, and I'm using the get last child method to get the chapter element from the sample message. Also, you have several getters and setters that you have for getting name, value, type, or namespace elements. And if you for any reason, if you want to manipulate the message tree, you can use the detach or detach all children. Or if you want to add an element or add an attribute, you can use the add element and add attribute methods. Okay? That's just a brief overview on PHP. So let's go to slide 17 and talk about EIS connectivity enhancements. Okay, first let's talk about what enhancements we have done to SAP. So if you want to send a reply to a SAP synchronous call, you can use the SAP reply node. SAP programs can call functions on remote RFC servers. So you can use this node and have your flow act as an RFC destination, which will receive the synchronous call from SAP and send a reply back. Okay? And about generic IDOC routing, what you can do is you can use the SAP input node in a pass-through mode, and the broker can receive any IDOCs and route them based on the type of the IDOC. There are some settings on this node that you have to do, which are listed in the info center. Okay? And with broker version 7, you can deploy a SAP adapter and a message flow containing a SAP input node to more than one broker on your network. So basically, you'll be able to build a highly available SAP environment by configuring the brokers to accept IDOC concurrently from the same system. Okay? And talking about the BAPI commit processing, there is a parameter on your adapter configuration wizard which will let you, once you configure, which will let you use this option to have the SAP adapter control the update synchronously or asynchronously. Okay? And as for the Siebel and PeopleSoft adapters, there is a new configurable service which will provide reconfiguration of key properties on the adapter node. They'll also support replacing your entire adapter configuration. Right? And there is a new feature called iterator discovery, which of the adapter component wizard. Basically, what this does is it will list only newly discovered objects from your enterprise information systems after you have configured your adapter configuration wizard. Okay? And if you have a message flow that interacts with your EIS, you can use that to call new services that were not there initially, and you can also create an event handler to an EIS so that it can handle the new event types. Basically, what this does is you don't have to redeploy when a new service or an event is generated by the EIS. This is called the iterative deployment feature. Okay? Let's move on to slide 18. There are two new nodes, the sequence and resequence nodes. Okay? Using the sequence node, what you can do is you can receive groups of messages from an input source and save the order in which the messages of each group are arrived. Your messages can arrive in any order, but once you use this node, you can propagate them based on their sequence number. Okay? The sequences have a defined start and end. So they are basically propagated in the order of sequence number within their group. So you can control the sequence number in which a group or groups of messages are propagated. Okay? You can set on the node properties different options like location, literal, or predicate, as I mentioned, showed here. Also, these nodes have comprehensive timeout handling capabilities. You can select the automatic property on the node properties and specify the timeout interval value or missing message timer, or you can raise exceptions whenever there's a duplicate message. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, slide 19. The file nodes and SFTP support. We got so many requests from the customers asking for SFTP support, and now it is available on both file input and file output nodes. Both these nodes support SFTP. So what you can do is you can combine file input and file output nodes with MQFT nodes for an end-to-end file transfer and processing. So if you want to configure file input or file output node for SFTP, configuration is very easy. All you have to do is change the protocol on the properties tab to SFTP from FTP. And SFTP uses, by default, the transfer mode is binary, and it uses port number 22 as the default. You can change it if you want, if you'd like. And you can also use the FTP configurable service for overriding several properties like your server name, port, and timeout values at runtime. All right? As far as authentication and other facilities go, you can specify username password combination or public key authentication or ciphers. Okay? Let's move to slide number 20. Multi-instance brokers. All right, what I'm going to show is a brief introduction of this feature. If you want detailed information on how to set up and configure multi-instance brokers, please drop me a note, and I will send you a link of one of the WSCEs given by one of my colleagues earlier this year. Okay? So basically, continuing with like what multi-instance brokers are, Broker version 7 utilizes the multi-instance queue manager support that is being offered by MQ 7.1 or 7.0.1. So you can use that feature to set up an HA configuration with an active-passive broker. Okay? The multi-instance brokers and queue managers store their configuration on a shared network storage. If, in case, the active broker fails, the passive broker assumes control. WMQ is going to provide the basic failover mechanism, so there is no HA coordinator. So you don't need to use HACMP or your Veritas cluster services or HA Linux, etc. Okay? And you can start multiple instances of Queue Manager on different systems. One will be the active instance, the other one will be the passive instance. So since the data is held in a network storage, and it's always owned by whichever is the active instance. If in case the active instance fails, the transition is very seamless, and the passive broker assumes control, and the queue basically the passive queue manager and broker will assume control. They will become active. So as I mentioned earlier, you can use the SAP input node with a multi-instance broker to set up a SAP HA environment. So in this setup, what you have is an active and standby broker queue managers. All right? Moving on to slide 21. With auditing and monitoring, there have been a lot of enhancements that have been done in version 7. So basically, what we do now is we generate comprehensive auditing and monitoring, auditing and monitoring events from flows at either design time or runtime. What does this do? It will give you an insight into the application and service connectivity. Okay. And business monitoring and intelligence, by you can feed these events to WebSphere Business Monitor. You can also configure the monitor events at development time or while you're administering your application. Every message broker node now has got a monitor tab, so you can set the options to generate events from that node. So you can configure your payload data, content style, identity, or sequence data. Also, the monitoring is non-invasive, so you can apply your monitoring profile to your existing flows. And you can also set event filters to limit your conditions. You can operationally enable, disable, or even change event production by using your MTSI change flow monitoring command. All the events that are published they are on well-known topics over MQ for multiple consumers. And these events that can be that are generated can be integrated into WebSphere Business Monitor version 7. And you will be able to monitor and analyze key performance indicators. And there is also automatic generation of monitor application descriptor models for use with Business Monitor version 7. Right? Moving on to slide 22. Resource status. Right. There is now the provision of a graphical performance monitor, so it will allow administrators to understand the behavior of deployed resources. You can get comprehensive reports of all resources, like your flows, nodes, or even parsers and JVMs. And you can filter by flow or execution group or broker. The Message Broker Explorer will show you all these performance stats, resource stats in a graphical format. You can sort them, filter them, or chart those performance statistics. And it also shows you your CPU and I/O metrics. And you can save this data that is available in a comma-separated value format so that you can export it and import it into Excel or some spreadsheet where you can do nice graphs. You also can get the JVM metrics, the amount of memory that's used by JVM, the number of threads that are being used, the heap stats, so on and so forth. Okay? Let's move to the next slide and talk about other enhancements. All right. We now have advanced samples for healthcare and retail. So we have a working industry sample for the T-log processing and an HL7 sample to send and receive HL7 messages over TCP/IP. And the database configuration without restarting. Suppose you set MTSI setdb parms on the command line. Previously, you had to restart the broker for this to take effect. You don't need to do it now, right? And execution groups are now enhanced, so they can be stopped independently to each other and the broker. In version 6 or 6.1, you could, all you had to do was kill the execution group and it used to restart immediately. Okay? But now you can stop and restart each and individual execution groups. Also, there is no concept of a default execution group anymore because version 6 and 6.1 or earlier versions, the default execution group is the one which used to start the pub/sub thread. And it used to manage all the publish/subscribe between all the message flows, so there is no default execution group. MQ handles pub/sub now. All right, there are new BIP messages which will identify your execution group and message flow start and stop events. All right? And now we have full stored procedure support for ESTL for Informix, okay? And the Java class loading has been enhanced, and you can now have class paths set on individual Java compute nodes. You can basically alter from the system class path. And Oracle Rack support is also available, and it will allow multiple listener failover, including XA. All right? Let's move to the next slide. Talking about more enhancements, the user trace, I mentioned it briefly, we have improved the user trace for many nodes. So when you take a user trace, it will give you detailed information than what it used to provide in earlier versions. So basically, it will help you understand when you read your trace of your flow processing. All right? And the MQSI list command now offers great details about your message flows, execution groups, and broker. And if you use a minus D for details or minus R for recursive, it can recurse through the broker and provide information about execution groups. Also, you can now integrate broker with service federation management. So you can use the broker as a connectivity server that can be administered by the Service Federation Management Console that's in the service registry. Okay? And you can use either HTTP or HTTPS as a communication protocol between the Service Federation Management and the broker. Okay? And basically, you will configure using NTSI change properties command. All right, let's go to the next slide. Talk about a little bit about debugging. Debugging has not changed drastically from version 6 or 6.1 to version 6.1 to version 7. You can still use your MKSI change properties command and set the JVM debug port on the command line. Or what you can do is from within the toolkit, right-click on the execution group, select your properties, and go to the extended tab and set a flow debug port. So you don't have to use the command line interface. That's one of the things that we have done. All right, let's go to the next page and see where you can do that. So like you see, there's a launch debugger. Before you launch the debugger, if you have not configured the JVM debug port, it will prompt you to configure a JVM debug port. By default, it is set to 0. So it will give you the debug port. Once you set the debug port, it basically allows you to start debugging. That's pretty much for debugging. There is nothing like complicated about it. All right? Let's go to the next slide and talk about some troubleshooting. All right. The first thing that you would need to do if you are going to troubleshoot for anything is to look at your logs, your syslog on Unixes or your event viewer on Windows or your job logs on ZOS, okay? These logs provide detailed information about all the events that happened from broker startup or like if you set the correct options, all the informational events are also going to be there. So you can see what's going on by looking at these logs. Then there are the standard out and standard error files. So typically, they are located in your NTSI work path under the broker name execution group UUID directory, which will have more information about specific nodes. If there are any exceptions that are thrown from these nodes, it will have them. On Windows, though, both the standard out and standard error files are combined, and they are called console.txt. And on ZOS, these files are created in the home directory that is defined in the JCL job that starts the broker, okay? And for any MQ problems, you can use your WMQ error logs to check as usual. And if you're using user database for any database activities, if you want to check a database problems, you will check the database logs, like your DB2 diag log, or Oracle also provides a log file, so on and so forth. And traces also help you, like the user trace, if you're trying to find out what are the problems in your flow processing, you can take a user trace and identify what's going on. Or if you have opened a PMR, we typically request you to send us a service trace because that has the user trace plus all the code that is being invoked under the covers. Okay? And if there are any database-related issues, we might optionally request an ODBC trace. That also gives you kind of information what is happening with the database activity. And finally, for any reason, if the broker is going to dump, it's going to generate an event file or like the FFDC files for MQ, they will also give you some clues as to what has happened. Okay? Basically, what these files will have is a stack trace at the time the failure occurred, okay? And as I mentioned, the BIP code will give you a description of the informational event or warning or errors. And for any reason, if we ask you, like, you know, you can always send us the broker export these days using the NTSI backup and restore commands. All right. Let's go to the next slide and recap what we have done in today's presentation. We talked about product simplifications. Basically, there's only one component now, the broker. In like earlier versions, you had a config manager, username, server. There is nothing now, just the broker. Broker is the loan warrior. Cattleman is the shell. And minimal prerequisites, only MQ being the prereq, and no dependencies on external products. And we have improved connectivity with a number of other products. The new SEA nodes provide interoperability with WPS and enhanced PHP support and EIS connectivity with Siebel, PeopleSoft, or SAP, and your new sequence and resequence nodes for message sequencing, and SFTP support with the file nodes, and monitoring and auditing support, and also multi-instance brokers, your auditing and monitoring enhancements, resource statistics, and a little bit about troubleshooting. So with that, basically that ends this presentation. So I want to thank you all for attending. What I'll do is now I'll turn it back to Joe before we open the lines for any questions. All right? Thank you all. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Kailash, for a wonderful presentation. At this point in time, Kathy, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Paul Hogan. You may ask your question.
Yes, good morning. Great presentation. I have three questions. The first should be relatively quick. The last one, I'm not sure. Okay, question number one, you said that we're going to start using the MQ PubSub engine. So are we saying that we have to have the run MQ broker commands issued with version 7 MQ and version 7 broker? Is that what we're really saying?
Can you repeat that, Paul?
No. Okay. The question has to do with PubSub engine.
Right.
Right. And what we're saying now is we have to issue the run MQ broker command under MQ. Is that what we're really saying?
No, not really. What's going to happen is if you have existing PubSub applications, as part of the migration, you will migrate all your publish-subscribe to MQ. And actually, there is another webcast that I gave earlier about migration, and that will tell you exactly what are all the commands that you need to use to migrate your publish-subscribe. And it will run because broker runs on top of MQ. So MQ version 7.01 will be responsible for publish subscribe. So you don't have to run the MQ broker under the couch.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. All right. Thank you. Okay, question number two has to do with the toolkit. And you mentioned that the toolkit will be able to start and stop the brokers now via the toolkit. My concern is, how do we secure that in production? On the one hand, we want the developers using the Explorer for the new Explorer, but we definitely don't want our developers starting and stopping brokers. Is there a way to secure the toolkit?
Yes.
So that, okay, very good. That's all I need to know.
That's the security, that you can set up using MQ authentication now. Basically, what you used to do is you used to use the ACLs in Config Manager for letting brokers or for letting the authorizations. Now you can do the same thing using MQ authentication.
Okay, excellent. And finally, the last question. We are heavily invested in OmegaMon XC for messaging. Every single one of our message flows has the embedded candle monitor node. So I have a few questions regarding all of that, but number one is, will the candle monitor node be migrated when we go from 6 to 7? So that's one. And also, in addition to that, I've seen, or you showed us the accounting and statistic data. It kind of looks like they're competing with one another. Are they? Do we need the candle monitor node anymore? And should we go with the accounting and statistics? Or do we keep the candle monitor node in? Because we have it integrated with the Tivoli Tech product, which the back end creates problem records for. So I'm really confused about all of that, only because we are heavily invested in OmegaMon XC. So candle monitor node, will it migrate?
Okay. Here's the thing. The accounting and statistics that are provided with the broker, they're inbuilt, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you talk about OmegaMon, it's a very specialized product to provide all these statistics, right?
Correct.
So depending on What I would suggest you do is take a look at, like, what the broker offers and whether that is sufficient for your enterprise, for your purposes. Is it meeting the same kind of expectations, or is it providing the same kind of details that you require or you're getting from OmegaMon?
Good point.
So based on that, you have to make the judgment saying, am I okay with, like, using what the broker provides? Is that sufficient for me? The reason why most of the customers use these monitoring products is for getting more details about the performance stats. So which is what the broker is trying to do. Now, we are using the inbuilt facilities to give you those details. So are the level of details that we are providing enough for you? If so, you have the built-in things. And
Correct. And
as far as migration is concerned, it's exactly like migrating a user-defined node. For us, an OmegaMon node is nothing but a user-defined node.
Okay.
So during the migration process, you have to follow what we suggest you do with migrating user-defined nodes. So the migration itself will not migrate any user-defined nodes automatically because we don't know about that, right?
But, I mean, it's an IBM product, but okay.
Yeah, I understand that. But what we will do is we will provide instructions for you to migrate those nodes over our transfer. Basically, all these nodes are nothing but jar files under the covers, right? And you have a workbench representation. There are two things to any node. You have a workbench representation. That's basically like for you to drag and drop on the canvas. And the second thing is when a message hits that node, what happens? What does the node should do? And that is like either the jar file or lil file based on the language that it's written. So you basically have to copy those jar files onto version 7.
Okay, good. Now, back to the accounting, last question. Sorry for monopolizing it.
Oh, no, not a problem.
The last question with the accounting and statistics data and all the data it's producing, does that integrate into the tech products, the IBM tech products?
I am not sure. To be honest, I don't know what the IBM tech product is. I have to go read up on it.
I don't know whether
it will integrate into that.
Okay. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Next question is from Brent Morris.
Yes, I've got a couple of questions. Hopefully they're relatively quick. The first one is the comment was made that you're moving your data to the file system, and this makes it easier for troubleshooting. Can I ask you, is this just an XML file, or is it a flat file? What is it?
They are stored in .dat files, but they are XML data.
Okay. I can see where that would be vastly easier then. So it really is not something that's proprietary depending on what operating system you're putting on. It's a .dat file, but it really is XML. Okay, thank you. Second question is, you'd made a comment regarding being able to use secure FTP. Since you're now relying on message queuing 7, they've got a file and transfer program has been promoted as a replacement for FTP for folks that are trying to go to SFTP. Does this new version integrate that new functionality and piggyback off of that functionality that's in version 7 of MQ?
You're talking about the MQ FTPs, right?
Yeah.
Yes. The file transfer is basically these file nodes will work with MQ FTE. In fact, I think like that was one of my comments I made saying using MQ FTE and the file nodes, you can do an end-to-end transfer.
Okay. I remember there was something, I believe it was maybe on slide 9, but it was a little quick. So third question is, regarding high availability hardware, and there was a comment there that
the high availability solutions that have been provided in the past, that this version of Message Broker is piggybacking off of the multi-instance queue manager support.
Right.
And has it been documented yet what you folks will be definitively supporting, or are we just to go ahead and dig that out of the MQ website and
find out
what they're supporting?
In fact, one of Jose asked this question on the same time chat here for the multi-instance broker WFCE webcast. One of my colleagues had given a presentation, I think like a couple of months back, on how to set up multi-instance brokers using multi-instance queue managers. The only reason, MQ has introduced the concept of multi-instance queue managers. So what we did was we used that to provide multi-instance brokers. Basically, you now have a highly available configuration with queue managers and brokers. So you don't have to use, with earlier versions when I worked with customers, they had an HACMP setup on AIX, or on Windows they used to use Microsoft Cluster Services. And if you're on Solaris, they used Veritas. Right? So they were using different vendor-supplied HA products to achieve HA configuration. And by default, broker never supported HA. We had a support pack, and we had, even though it was written by her, the development team, it was always like a CAT2 support pack. So it's as is. So even though customers used to come, we used to support them, but they always used to ask, what is your support statement on HA? We never said, officially we support HA, but we did because, hey, the broker is running like just a regular broker. Only thing is you have to configure it on an active-passive and use those facilities. But now it's inbuilt. The multi-instance brokers provide you that active-passive configuration.
So it would be safe to say then that if a person goes ahead and reviews the multi-instance queue manager, that gives you a pretty good hint of what the multi-instance for message broker would be using.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to look for where do I need to go to look for the information to find out what's supported. Would that be a fair statement, sir? Just go ahead and confirm what is available in MQ version 7?
Well, there are two parts to it. The multi-instance queue managers, because the broker needs to have a queue manager, right? So if you go look at MQ, they're going to tell how to set up multi-instance queue managers. And if you look on Broker Info Center, you have how to set up multi-instance brokers. But as I mentioned to Jose, or as I responded back to him, there is a presentation that covers how to set up multi-instance brokers along with multi-instance queue manager setup. And my email address is on the first slide. Drop me a note, and I can send you a link to the WSCE, and you will have an audio file also so that you can listen to what Rao has presented.
All righty. And my last question is, what can I tell clients that are interested in using PubSub, but they're trying to get away with just using what is now provided in MQ? What can I tell them is the pain point that they're going to hit when they've gone too far? Because I think you mentioned that because MQ is supporting PubSub, I think it's a single topic is the support. And I'm just trying to understand now what is the threshold so that I can communicate to folks that, look, you've gone beyond what's in MQ. You need to go to Message Broker.
I would have them look at the manuals first and see what changes have been done, because it's not a very simple yay or nay answer for this.
Okay.
Okay? I wish I could have given you, yeah, go ahead, but it's more than that. Because if you are trying to, like, you know, develop a PubSub solution, I would suggest them to take a look at, like, what MQ is offering, what are the features in 7.0.1, and see whether that will fit.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean I think that's a you know, from a marketing standpoint, or at least from a communication standpoint, maybe not at the 50,000 foot level, but at some point somebody needs to be able to discern that, you know, hey, this is not, you know, what's built into MQ now is not going to cut it. We need to go ahead and plan on purchasing Message Broker instead of having, you know, folks. So if you could take that as some feedback that somebody needs to go ahead and draw a line in the sand so that folks will know at what point they actually need to step it up and purchase Message Broker.
Okay.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
You're very welcome.
The next question comes from Mohan. Your line is open.
Hi. I was just wondering if MB version 7 is supported on AIX, which is being run on an iSeries LPAR.
I think it is. In fact, like, I'm just trying to look for the SOE page, so give me a few seconds. Somebody else asked whether Z-Linux is supported. I think it does.
Okay.
Are you ready for the next question?
Yes, I am.
The next question comes from Vikas Rana. Your line is open.
This is Vikas Rana from Wellington. I just wanted to ask about supportability issue of version 7 message broker on virtualized environment, particularly VMware supported virtual machines built on Sun Solaris hardware. So what's your, you know, comments about that?
Okay. One of the things that we always have done with VMware is it is supported, but when VMware has come, we always thought, like, oh, it's always the VMware that's the culprit. So our support statement used to be, yeah, if you can recreate the same problem on a system running without VMware, yes, we will definitely consider that to be, like, you know, not a bug of broker but VMware. So off late, like, you know, everybody is running on VMware. So, yes, we do support. Most of the customers do come in and say that they are running stuff on VM, and it is supported.
All right. Just a corollary to this, will the multi-instance functionality be as is, even in a VMware environment? I'm not sure whether any customers have actually done that kind of setup yet. But
I have not tried it either.
All right.
So, I mean, I, to be honest, like, you know, it should work, but it's one of those things, yeah, we haven't tried it. At least I haven't tried it.
All right.
I can ask, like, whether anybody in system test have done it.
Okay.
Right now I don't have an answer for that. But, I mean, VMware is VMware, so whether you have multi-instance brokers on there, it's still, like, you know, running on one VM, right? So it should work.
Okay.
I mean,
thank
technically
you.
Thinking.
Yep.
Sorry, like, you know, I could not give you a direct answer saying yes, but.
Yep, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay.
The next question comes from Leonard Bonich. Your line is open.
Hi, Kailash. More of a comment. You mentioned that the migration from 32-bit to 64-bit is automatic. Now, I'm not sure what the documentation says, but there's an APAR that actually just closed about a week ago that seems to be suggesting otherwise, that you need this APAR on for that migration to be automatic. So I just wanted to bring it to your attention. This is for the AIX, Solaris, and HP platforms, and the APAR is Indigo Charlie 66021, and it's only at the version 6.107 level, so it appears that at any other level you would need an eFix.
Yes, it does look like that. You do need that APAR.
Otherwise, you'll have to manually recreate the execution groups.
Right. Yes, you are correct. But
say, I'm not sure what the documentation says, whether this was actually a defect or not. Or
well, normally, like, you know, the documentation is written like how the product is supposed to work.
Yeah.
So if we encounter a problem, yes, we will provide a fix to address that. So obviously this APAR is needed for these platforms for it to be migrated, I guess.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sandeep Rain. Your line is open.
Hey, hi, Kailash. I have a question on SAP request node. Does version 7 have a support to configure multiple RFCs on a single JC adapter?
So you want to configure multiple RFCs on a single adapter?
Yeah. So right now, version 7, if you want to call multiple SAP RFCs, BAPI function modules, at same land SAP landscape, you need to create each different SAP connector for that particular message. So,
Sandeep, I am not sure about that. I can check with the development team and let you know. If you can drop me a note, please.
Yes, sure. Thanks.
There are no other questions at this time.
Thank you, Kathy. I do see a couple of questions in the group chat, so
okay.
Kailash, I'm just going to read them out to you.
No, I'll take a look at them because I am logged in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds perfect.
Okay.
All right, so the first question here comes from Ann Siney from IBM, and his question is, if I am running on Linux, how do I tell what version I am running on, whether it's 32-bit versus 64-bit?
Okay, depending on what Linux it is, like as I said, most of the operating systems, the broker is 64-bit by default. And if you list your MQSI list command, that's going to tell you what execution groups you're running. Or you can actually see your syslog. The startup events of the execution groups is going to indicate whether it's a large execution group or a normal execution group. Large means it's a 64-bit. And the event ID, if I'm not mistaken, is BIP 2008. Whereas if it's a regular 32-bit execution group, no, sorry, it is 2208. And if it is a 32-bit execution group, the BIP code that starts up the execution group is BIP 2201. Yeah, the startup events will give you that information.
The next question, Kailash, is from Pafan, and the question is MQ version 7 supported on an AIX running on an I-series LPAR?
Okay, it only says 64-bit IBM system, P systems only, so not on I-series.
Thank you, Kailash. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.